Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello Rank Squad and welcome to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. After one of the most insane games of football we have ever witnessed, perhaps the best two-legged tie the Champions League has ever seen, as Inter Milan knock Barcelona out in the semi-finals 7-6 on aggregate, 4-3 on the night at the Giuseppe Meazza at San Siro, in what was an encounter that had pretty much everything. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host as we try to work our way through the chaos. And joining me pretty much straight after that final whistle, all the way from San Diego, it's Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, that was fun. Possibly the best Champions League two-legger of all time, I guess. I guess that's what we're set.
I think it probably has to be. I mean, in terms of goals scored, it matched the record of 13 goals, which was set two different games, I believe, in a knockout tie. Liverpool, Roma, and Sporting against Bayern. One of those was 12-1 to Bayern on aggregate. So I think we can safely discount that one. The 7-6, the Liverpool-Roma game, I think we'll remember, had a couple of consolation goals late on rather than it having any real jeopardy. Obviously, you can look at the great ties, the remontada, what happened at Anfield, the corner taken quickly night. But I think in terms of pure entertainment, in terms of two teams just standing there and going toe to toe over the course of 210 minutes, I cannot remember something that swung like that tie back and forth and back and forth in the way that we've just witnessed tonight. It was truly, truly incredible. It's the kind of game that neutrals watching, and neutrals will be watching, or people who have the kind of passing interest in football, not necessarily neutral in terms of the teams they support, but people who have a passing interest in football or who maybe haven't seen that much of it will watch that game and be like, yeah, I could get into this. I could get into this sport. This sport is absolutely nuts. It's just one of those things I think will live long, long, long in the memory.
Yeah, it's the sort of game you need people to see who are skeptical of the sport. I mean, obviously out in America, I still come across plenty of people that are willing to have a dig at football, particularly like basketball fans and stuff. They'll be like, oh, cool, you went to a game for 2 hours and didn't see a goal and all that sort of stuff. And then you can throw something like this at them and say, okay, how many NBA games live up to that? And obviously there are some. Like, I love a lot of sports because they're all dramatic in their own ways. But this is unbelievable. And look, to assess it on face value, Inter Milan are into the Champions League final after almost throwing it away twice, right? They led by two goals twice in this tie. And now, did they throw that away twice? Did Barcelona force their way back twice? Maybe a bit of both. But to have gone through all of that and actually come out victorious, that's unbelievable for me. That Inter actually had that extra layer to still come through it. Because when this game went 2-2, I thought that was it. I thought there's no way Barcelona are not taking the momentum from this and getting through to the final. And
obviously, well, I mean, they did take the momentum. They took the lead. It is bizarre, though, that Barcelona were actually ahead for 6 minutes of these 210. Six minutes. And they looked like they were going to be the crucial 6 minutes. They looked like that was going to be the moment. But out of nowhere, Inter pulls something out of the fire. And look, this is a wily old team. There's been a lot made of the fact that they're the oldest team within these semi-finals. There's been a lot of talk about Barcelona's youth. And I kind of wanted to start with this because I don't know if you can work your way through that game. We'll talk about the first half, Inter were. We'll talk about how good Barcelona were in the second half. There's loads to get through. But I wonder, the kind of crucial moment for me is at 3-2 up with 2 minutes to play of extra time. Now, I love that Lamine Yamal had a shot. I love that he hit the post. I love that he went for goal in that moment. Does a team slightly more experienced go for the corner there and kill the game dead? And maybe that's the kind of moment it's won or lost. Now, there's loads that happens between, you know, that happening and the fact that the goal goes in. Yes, it's only a few kind of, you know, moments within the game, but in that moment, there is still plenty of chances for Barcelona to get rid of the ball. The pass from Thuram to Dumfries is misplaced. He has to basically scrap to get that ball. It comes across, and Acerbi has loads to do in terms of the finish. And it's a wonderful finish from the oldest player on the oldest team, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing that got me thinking was I was watching it back and I was watching that moment. And look, if that goes in, Lamine Yamal is standing there, you know, in front of the end at San Siro and giving it the big in and being like, I've just decided this. I'm the man. And he comes inches away from actually making that happen. But it did kind of strike me as there was a slightly more experienced, a slightly more mature team potentially go for the corner.
I just don't know. I don't know if that's ever going to be in Lamine's nature. I just think that he's different. He's built different to any other footballer you're going to see in this generation. And he will always believe he's going to score. And so I'd say for most players, 9 out of 10 players, I would say, yeah, they will regret not doing that, or that they will next time go and do that. And with Lamine Yamal, I don't believe that to be true. I think that this kid is just, I'm going to say once in a lifetime sensation. It's not quite that. It's maybe once in a 10 to 20 year generation, you know, like he's the only person that's new to this conversation that you can see coming through. Obviously, like since you've had Messi and Ronaldo, you've had like Mbappe come through, and that's probably the closest you've seen to that kind of level. But Lamine seems to be taking that into a potentially a whole new world. And I don't think it's in his DNA to just play the safety game. Maybe it should have been. Maybe if he'd have done that, we'd be talking now about Barcelona in a Champions League final. But it wasn't to be. And I hope it's not a case of looking, I'm not saying you're doing this, but I've already seen a couple of Barca accounts looking for scapegoats, and Gerard Martin again getting loads of stick, despite the fact he'd done so much for them positive in this game, getting stick for the way that they conceded that third goal. And I'm like, leave him alone. Like, don't be looking for that in this moment. And fortunately, it does always happen.
It happens, right? Like, I just saw a tweet from our friend Harry Brooks, head coach of this podcast, who basically said, sometimes at the end of the game, you just shake hands and go, look, either team could have come through. That was just a wonderful game of football. And sometimes that's just the way the cookie crumbles, right? And I think he's probably right. You shake hands and go, you know what? We have left everything out there. Both of us have left everything on the field. And you know, it's been decided in the way it's been decided. But, you know, we have to kind of look at it. I texted Sam halfway through this game and I basically went, I tell you what, Gerard Martin can't defend to save his life, but my God, can he whip a ball in? Yeah. And it did feel a little bit like that. I think the problem with having a player like that is around him, you probably need to have some experience trying to guide him. And Iñigo Martínez lost his head very, very early on in this game. And he never really got it back. And they brought on Ronald Araujo, who came into the pitch and didn't really do enough in terms of helping out his left back, who was clearly struggling from a defensive perspective. A lot of people are going to against Denzel Dumfries, especially when you're playing in a game that, you know, plays to his strengths in the way that this one did. And again, he proved to be the tormentor after having such a good first leg. But let's kind of roll it back a little bit, because I think we should probably start with Inter, really. They are in a Champions League final for the second time in 3 years. They have got there through sheer force of will, it felt like, at times. But at halftime, I was sitting there thinking, that's one of the most mature performances I've seen in what was a cauldron of noise, right? Against opponents who did give you a lot of grief in the first leg from a defensive perspective in terms of trying to keep them out. The way that they dealt with things, now, whether that was doubling, trebling up on Lamine Yamal, I thought that they dealt with him better in the second leg than they did in the first leg. It didn't mean that he was completely quiet. He had opportunities. He made things happen. He still seems to be able to do whatever he wants at times on a pitch. But I thought that they were a little bit smarter in terms of the way that they brought him down, that they kicked him a little bit more. Now, obviously, that's not necessarily what you want to see as a neutral. But if it's your team in there, you're like, bring him down. Make sure he doesn't have the ability to skip away from players and make things happen. He got much, much better at that in the second half. But in the first half, I thought that Inter dealt with it admirably. And the way that they pressed, the way that they forced errors from this Barcelona side, the way that they squeezed the midfield in a way that Barcelona liked to do, you know, going the other way, I thought was very, very impressive. And after a first sort of 10 minutes where it sort of felt their way into the game a little bit, I thought they were the dominant side in that first half and well worth a 2-0 lead at the break.
Yeah, I mean, the high line wasn't very helpful to Barcelona in the end, and it was something that was talked about a lot coming into the fixture, and whether that would be something that Inter could make the most of. And I think it did prove to be.
It was turnover ball, I think, as much as anything else. High line against when the ball's turned over quickly in the middle. That's where it really, really struggled.
Yeah. You know, I don't know whether there was much they could have done about that. Maybe, you know, you can't just turn it on and turn it off as to when you're going to defend like that.
Yeah, live by the sword, die by the sword, right?
Yeah. And look, last week I sat here and talking about how surprised I was that DiMarco had played in the first leg. And the second leg, I thought, especially in the first half, I thought, I know DiMarco got subbed again early in the second half. I thought he was great. And I was surprised he came off when he did.
He didn't come off looking 40 years old this time. Last time he came off looked like he's aged 10 years. This time he came off with his head held high, I thought.
Exactly. It's a weird, they're a weird team, Inter, aren't they? Like, what a weird old team. Like that, but they are a wily old team too. And maybe it is the fact, when I keep saying old, I don't mean like quite literally like they're really old. But they are older than Barcelona. And maybe just those extra couple of wise heads have helped them through those stages. So in the first half, yeah, I thought it was a really impressive performance. I think it really took people aback that they were able to play in that way. Look, a few years ago, you wouldn't have got that penalty decision. Yes, but at the end of the day, it's a penalty. Like it's the right decision.
I think Bossy's unlucky.
I do 100% unlucky, and
not necessarily in the fact that he's given, because he obviously takes out Lautaro, but I just think that he's actually lunched in there with a very, very good attempt to win the ball, and Lautaro's just been really cute. Like it's one of those that happens, and ultimately, you know, it gets stepped in and the decision gets given, and from that moment you know Calhanoglu's gonna score, right? Like there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever that he's gonna stick in the back of the net.
It's a brilliant penalty.
You can be unlucky and it can still be a foul at the same time. Like those two things don't have to be, you know, juxtaposed.
So I was like, okay, well, it's not done, but it kind of is. Like this is going to take quite a turnaround. And the thing that you were all sat there thinking probably at halftime is, well, an Italian league, Italian team aren't going to throw away a two-goal lead at halftime. Not for a second time. Not after throwing away a two-goal lead already in the first leg. They'll learn from that. The one thing Italian teams love is defending a lead. And this is a great team at doing that. They've got some of the best. Acerbi, like you can see his mindset.
They're an exceptionally good defensive unit when they want to be. Now that's been tested in recent weeks and perhaps the stress test has found it a little bit more wanting, but it shouldn't detract from what Inter's record in the Champions League was before these last few weeks.
Yeah, exactly that. And I trusted them, to be honest. But I guess for Barcelona, it was like, well, there's only one thing to do now. We go for it. And we've got the makeup in our squad to just do that. Like, we don't really want to be sitting on a lead anyway. We want to be going after a game. And if we can rock them, we can really rock them. And then the turnaround was complete. They did do it. They actually did it. And it's more sensational that they go from beginning their comeback to throwing it away. So I thought, yeah, Inter were great. And I just think that, like, once you start inviting Barca to come on, it's difficult for anyone. And it proved that even one of the best clubs in the world at defending can't handle it when you're getting wave after wave that they had to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is that for the first sort of 10 minutes of the second half, I was like, I don't know. I don't really see how Barcelona are going to score here. Like the avenues are being blocked off. The defensive channels are being run really well. And then a couple of things happen. One is that they go fullback to fullback. And, you know, remember from our BR Football Ranks days that we love a fullback to fullback goal.
I mean, nobody saw this to be their way back into the game. That's for sure.
But I tell you what, it's a wonderful cross, you know, from Gerard Martin, who did have, you know, a tough evening defensively. But it's a wonderful cross from him. It's an even better finish from Eric Garcia. As you say, nobody saw that coming. But it felt like that moment broke the game open, right? And at that moment, it was like Inter didn't feel like they were going to concede at that point. And suddenly they've conceded from a bizarre source of, you know, fullback to fullback. Yes, Jules Koundé has popped up with some big goals for Barcelona, none bigger than the one in the Copa del Rey final. But I think over the course of it, you kind of look at it and think Eric Garcia doesn't look like the kind of player who's going to step up in that position and guide a really cultured volley into the top corner. But from the moment that that goal goes in, it's like Barcelona are like, oh, we're on. And they flood forward. And suddenly that energy that Inter had used so well in the first half, you know, to win the ball back, it was suffocating. We've used this word so many times, right, in the last few weeks with PSG and with Barcelona, I think, in particular. But the suffocation in the second half where Inter didn't feel like they could get out of their half, never mind into the opposition box. There was a moment in like the 75th minute where I think the score was 2-2, where Inter finally, it was before Rafinha scored, where Inter finally got into Barca's box. And I was like, the camera hasn't moved around this far for approximately 25 minutes. Like, it has just been facing in one direction. And they finally, the camera operators finally had to do some work. And the crowd lifted a little bit. But up to that point, you could feel it. And we talk about, you know, maintaining it. And look, San Siro was unbelievable tonight. The noise at the start was absolutely through the roof. The noise at the start of the second half was unbelievable. And the noise in extra time was deafening. But there was a period where Barcelona seemed to suck the soul out of the stadium by just literally not letting in to have the ball for more than 10 seconds at a time. Mm. And at that point, you were like, how do Inter drag themselves out of this? Because Lautaro has gone off by this point. You know, he went off around the 70th minute mark. Mediterranean hadn't done very much to get into the game. There was a real struggle to see how Inter were going to fashion their opportunities, how they were ever going to kind of get the ball back and turn this into a game that was end to end, because Barcelona felt that good and that strong. And Rafinha, I thought, drifting off that left-hand side and starting to control things in the middle was a really major part of this. And I'll talk more about him in part two when we talk about the extra time and what happened there. But I think that when we're kind of looking at this part of the game, you know, there's one thing sitting back and soaking up pressure, right? And Inter do that very, very well. There is another thing not having an out ball. It's another thing when you don't seem to be able to use your limbs correctly or pass the ball correctly because you are just chasing and chasing and chasing. And it was like from the moment that Eric Garcia got on the end of that cross and pulled this unlikely goal out of the bag, suddenly Inter were rocked and Barcelona felt like they had all of that momentum. And that is, you know, we talk about youth and we talk about experience, etc. This is when a young team really can hurt you, because if they feel the wind's in their sails, they are absolutely going to go full steam ahead into that. There is no caution about the idea of conceding straight after you've scored. There is none of that with this Barcelona performance. It is them just ramping it up to kind of maximum. And to be honest, Inter couldn't withstand it for that period. It was basically all hands to the pump to try and keep the boat above water.
Yet then Eric Garcia had the chance again, and Jan Sommer pulls off a save out of nowhere. Like, he just appeared out of thin air almost. Like, okay, Garcia's like, he hasn't finished it well. He's put it too close to the center of the goal to give the keeper a chance. But I think he honestly was just like, I've just got to hit the target.
Yeah.
Just got to hit the target. Just make sure this hits the target and I've scored. And Sommer, like a cat, leaps out of the air and manages. It's an unbelievable save. I mean, when you're looking back at moments that decided this tie, it's such a big one. I know Barcelona went on to score and take the lead anyway, but just even in that moment to have prolonged it a little bit and to also give his team some faith and hope in him, that was huge. I think someone was brilliant anyway, all tie. But yeah, that moment I thought was key even before, Dani Olmo did go on and find that second goal.
So Jan Sommer was man of the match from where I was standing. I thought that some of the saves he pulled off tonight were absolutely astounding, but also that sense of calm, etc., that he gives to his defenders. Yes, he's conceded three times, but equally imagine how many they could have conceded without someone that good in net. And I'm feeling pretty smug about that shout, Dean, that he was their player ahead of these semi-finals. He was the one that was going to take them into this final if they were going to get there. So that's good. I mean, Denzel Dumfries probably would stand up and be like, hey, man,
what about five goals and assists?
Yeah, he's probably got something to be
across one tie. I think people don't get that entire tournament.
I mean, look, just across all of it, Jan Sommer was just absolutely unbelievable. And having a keeper who you can rely on in moments like that, and this is it. He's not the biggest keeper in the world. But when you kind of watch him, his positioning, his shot stopping is exceptional. He still carries himself incredibly well within his box. He claims crosses really well. He palms things away that are close to his goal. As a kind of complete goalkeeper, for someone who doesn't necessarily have the frame of like a Donnarumma or a Courtois, there are very, very few better in world football than Yann Sommer. I think he's astounding.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, then to take it on, obviously, Barca get their second goal. And then it looks like they get the penalty, which is adjudged to be an inch outside the box as Mkhitaryan brings down Lamine. I mean, I think
Inter are a little bit lucky here because the foul is obviously outside the box, but there is more contact inside the box when, you know, the legs clash together. And the rules are unclear at times, right?
Well, on CBS, they described it as if that had been a shirt pull that continued into the box, it's a penalty. If it's a foul that continues into the box, it's still a free kick outside the box.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, so that's how they, because I thought exactly the same thing. And then thankfully they clarified it as to that being the reason as to why that would have happened. Because I agree, like it was a trip and then like his knee kind of cut across him, his thigh. And I thought exactly the same. I was like, oh, I don't know. I think that's still a pen, but apparently we're wrong and it's actually not.
Fair enough. In which case, it's definitely not a penalty. If that's the rules, then it's not a penalty. The trip definitely happens outside the box.
But Inter were dominated then across the second half. You know, Barca, you know, they could smell blood and they were ready to go for it. Lamine almost scored a worldie and we were getting into those late stages just wondering how, if, when it would be decided. And, well, we thought it was up. You know, Rafinha scores, and that's it. That's the goal that sends Barcelona into the Champions League final. Like, I was 85, 90% sure of it. I really was. Like,
more than that, I think. 87th minute goal in a tie that played like this with Inter knocking on their head like that.
Because of the way the game had been, I wasn't ruling out a weird ending. But I tell you what was weird, you know, Rafinha scores and, you know, it's a great moment and he's very composed to react as quickly as he does to take the second shot at it. And, you know, shows why he was, I don't know if he still will be, was up for being a Ballon d'Or candidate for the year. And then as Barca are celebrating, it didn't go unnoticed that I'm not saying thousands of Inter fans, but certainly a fair few started heading for the exit. And I was like, oh, like I've left games early, don't get me wrong. And yeah, if I was an Inter fan, I'd be pretty annoyed right now and I wouldn't have much faith in my team. But you're in a Champions League semi-final. There's a few minutes left plus added time. And yeah, you could go and get the early train or you could get out the car park early, whatever it is. But what if? And I tell you what, there are Inter fans that left this game in that moment.
Well, they're wrong.
And tried to get back in.
There is an amazing video going around on social media of a load of Inter fans who are at the gate, who'd left at 3-2 and are trying to get back in at 4-3. And the gate guard has been like, nope.
Yep, you can't. That's the rules.
And also, the gate guard is right.
Yep.
If you left at 3-2, you do not get to celebrate.
Everyone knows, by the way, you cannot get back in a stadium ever. Never, ever are you allowed back in, are you? Like, no. We all know that.
But like, even like without being funny, even if that wasn't the rule, like if you leave at 3-2, you have no right to celebrate your team.
Your support is unwanted. Get out of here.
Like, honestly, that's it. Like you either stick around. Like if you leave at 5-0 down and your team ends 5-0, I think you go like, I mean, you can't predict this. You just can't. That's impossible to predict. But not a 3-2 down in a Champions League semi-final with like 6 minutes left to play. Like,
no,
you just can't. It's impossible. I'm sorry. I have no sympathy whatsoever with anybody
who left
the stadium early.
I mean, talk about Melon of the Week behaviour. We need to bring it back. This week's Melon of the Week is Inter Milan fans that left early. They probably felt justified if they heard the thump of a post as Lamine almost wrapped it all up, thinking, you know, maybe some even walked out in that moment thinking, oh my God, I'm walking out. I don't want to see Barca score a fourth. But,
well, to be fair, they wouldn't have even got to the gate if they'd, before the cheers.
If they'd left at that point, that's true. They would have been okay. They could have run back in. You're right.
They still deserve punishment, but still, like, they would have been all right. They wouldn't have even got to the exits by that point. And then everything turns around again. We're going to deal with that Acerbi equaliser and all of what happened in extra time after the break. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC, talking about Inter into the Champions League final after an incredibly dramatic 4-3 win over Barcelona at the Southern Triumph, 7-6 on aggregate. Jack Collins and Dean Jones alongside you. And Dean, I think that Acerbi might have been the most unlikely goal scorer. We talked about Eric Garcia being an unlikely goal scorer for Barcelona. I don't think anyone, even the most staunch, the most ardent Acerbi loyalist, would have had him scoring the equaliser in the 93rd minute of this one, especially given the way that the game was going. He'd been thrown up there to sort of cause some fuss, I think, more than anything else. But the way that this goal happens, I mean, look, lots of things happen in quick succession, right? Like, Thuram gets the ball in the middle of the park. He misplaces his pass, and it's a bad pass for Dumfries. And what happens is Gerard Martin, it sort of hits him on the back of the heel. Dumfries gets back around him. He doesn't give up on it. And that's probably worth noting. He, you know, everyone else is like, that's a lost cause. That's an absolutely dreadful ball. And Dumfries battles his way back into it. Their Barcelona bench are screaming for a foul. I don't think there's a foul here. And then the ball gets crossed across, and Acerbi sort of curls one round from outside the post into the top corner. It's an incredible finish, but Dumfries deserves so much of the credit for this goal, because it is an absolutely outstanding bit of work to not only recover the ball, but then put in a cross that is into that dangerous area once again.
Yeah, I mean, it was a magnificent performance from Dumfries. 3 assists and 2 goals, as we say, across this tie. And in that moment, you just need a level head. You need somebody that's going to make a solid decision. You need somebody that's not going to panic. And even seeing Acerbi there rather than Lautaro Martinez, he was willing to place it as well as he could and give him the best chance he could to stick it in the back of the net. And why did he take it? I mean, Acerbi, like, before the game and before the second half, they really zoomed in on him in the footage I had, and he was spent a lot of time like pointing up to the heavens and talking to someone. And whoever was talking to really did help him out, because I tell you what, that worked. Someone was watching over him, and whew, what a finish. What a finish and what a moment. Like, that stadium. Oh my God. Can you imagine if you were one of the people that left and were walking away and you heard that roar? That roar must have been so, so loud.
Also, do you think it's like, do you think you're like, oh no, or do you think you're happy your team's equalized?
You're saying, oh no. I think you're saying, oh no, because you've missed it. Obviously, you're happy you're not out. And obviously, those same people were probably going to be at the final, so they'll be happy that they're there. But you're saying, oh no, because you're gone. And you know you're gone. Even if you do run back, you know you're not getting back in. And you've just missed one of the most iconic nights, celebration moments that you could have left in the San Siro. And you've just gone so that you can, I don't know, get home early, whatever the reason is.
I've got a weird theory, by the way, and there's no way of ever proving this, but I'm just going to throw it out into the ether. I think if the game ends 2-2, Barcelona win it in extra time.
Why?
Because I think all the momentum remains with them. Okay. The air doesn't get punctured out of the balloon, because at 2-2, they've got all of it. And fine, okay, they'll be like, Inter celebrate that they've got to the end of it and they can reset, etc. But I don't think that takes it out of you in the same way.
I don't know.
I think that there's an interesting bit about this, right? Like, in terms of how you're looking at it and how it's all, because that goal raises the decibel level by, you know, by about double, right? I think if Inter hang on to the end of normal time, obviously the crowd are like, yes, okay, let's go, let's reset and do it again. But it's not the same like euphoria of scoring a 93rd minute equaliser to send you into the final, or to send you into extra time, sorry. And I think that when you're kind of putting it in that context, maybe that changes the dynamic of it. But let's come on to the extra time, because whilst the Acerbi goal is great, I think it's one of those kind of once in a lifetime moments that you know, if he gets that opportunity 5 more times, I don't know if it's going in the back of the net, any of them, but he hits it really, really well. But it gets into extra time, and Inter have this renewed lease of life. the game kicks off and it's not much the same. It's now a little bit more end to end. How well does Marcus Thuram do for this Fratesi goal? Because he has nobody around him. He's completely isolated. He is back to goal. He has to control the ball, hold it up for a bit, then double back, beat Ronald Araujo, and then finally find the moment. And yes, Taremi officially gets the assist. Mm-hmm. But actually, the work that Thuram does here to build this goal up and actually put it all together is incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. Thuram is... he's a very strong lad and he's very confident as well.
As in, what are we talking here? The 100 and...
I've lost track of everything at this point.
Yeah, I don't know when the exact moments...
The game was just rolling on at this point. I don't even know...
That energy to hold off a player who's just come on as a substitute in Araujo as well, you know, and actually then go and beat him at that point in the game where you have spent most of the game chasing aimlessly after the ball, or at least the entire second half chasing aimlessly out after the ball, is a real feat of nature.
Yeah, exactly. And look, Araujo is going to get, you know, talk about people that are going to get stick from this. I reckon Araujo might be one of them too. I don't think he'll be devoid of blame when Barca start pointing fingers. But yeah, I absolutely agree that to do that at that stage of the game in that manner was pretty special. And I mean, the celebrations were just awesome. I mean, you know, climbing the gates and having... I think Lautaro might have been one of the first ones jumping on him after sprinting from the subs bench. I'm pretty sure that he was straight on his back halfway up that yellow gate that they were all leaping around. That was just incredible. Incredible moment. And I have to... you said you thought the game would have been different at 2-2. I honestly still thought, even after Inter had taken this game into extra time in the manner that they did, I still thought Barcelona were going to win in extra time, because they are the sort of team that just don't really care what phase of the game they're in. They'll just try and play sweep away football and they'll just do something. Someone will do something weird. Lamine will come up with something. Lewandowski's obviously on the pitch by that point, so even half a chance, he might stick it in the back of the net. And yeah, I just thought that Barca would push it all out of their minds and just play freely and say, will be. And yeah, I was pretty surprised in the end, to be honest, that it ended up this being the last goal, if I'm honest. I was not prepared for there to be an end to the goals or an end to the drama. I was waiting for the lead to be overturned one more time.
I did think that maybe the only fair outcome of this game would have been penalties, considering the chaos that we've actually seen. But
I'm glad it wasn't.
Yeah, me too. And I think that what's interesting here is that, I mean, there's no way of proving this. I didn't. When it went into extra time, I was like, I think Inter win it from here. I think the experience might start to tell here, and especially if there is a lead. And once they took the lead, I was like, I wonder if Barcelona lose their heads a bit. And I think Hansi Flick lost his head a bit, because what Barcelona were doing, even, you know, when it comes back and they have that last sort of 3-4 minutes of the first half of extra time, Barcelona took back control of the game. And Pedri had been running things, right, in the middle. Then they make these changes at the kind of halftime moment of extra time, where Gavi comes on for Pedri, fine, and Pau Victor comes on for Pau Cubarsí. And at that point also, you'll notice in the last sort of 7 or 8 minutes, Ronald Araujo just went up front. And Rafinha was effectively playing centre back. Now, it didn't really matter in that regard, because obviously there was a space here in terms of everyone was just sort of playing wherever they could at that point. But the moment I started to see Rafinha picking the ball up in the centre half position, because Rafinha, I thought, up to that point, he really started drifting, and he puts the ball through for Lamine Yamal, who, you know, it's a brilliant save again from Jan Sommer. He tips around the corner. That is such a thread the needle pass from Rafinha. And the more that he basically dropped into the back line, the less Rafinha was able to influence the game in the final third. And I thought if anyone was going to pick the lock, it was going to be Rafinha. And so at that moment, when Barcelona basically abandoned all shape, bear in mind, there's still 15 minutes left at this point. They abandon shape and they just chuck everyone forward. There's a lot of youngsters on the pitch by this point. You know, Pau Victor's on there, Hector Fort's on there, Fermín López is on there, as well as the players, you know, who started the game. And you're kind of looking at it going, ooh, okay, where are they going to find that moment of calm? The rain is lashing it down by this point, which probably should be taken into account when we talk
it
about
it. Really was, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it is absolutely all over the place. People are sliding around. The ball is slipping everywhere. And Barcelona kind of appreciate that when you have 5 minutes left to save a game, you have to just throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. But I thought that taking Pedri off meant that they'd lost all of the ability to kind of flip around in those positions. I think I probably would have taken Frenkie de Jong off at that point, although I thought he had a good game. I think it would have been Pedri and Gavi would have given them a little bit of a basis to build from, and maybe that would have allowed Rafinha to stay in a further attacking position. Pedri being at the base would have just allowed him to stay further forward. And as it was, I kind of felt like he was trying to do everything. I don't think he does that if Pedri's on the pitch. And that was the moment I was like, well, Barcelona have lost this. Now, there were still chances, obviously. Rafinha trying to score from a corner kick in extra time was personally probably the most enjoyable moment of the game. He was like, right, I'll just have to try and do it myself then, will I? If no one else is going to get on the end of these. Lewandowski has a couple of sort of half chances, we should probably say. There's one from a header from a Lamine Yamal cross where he does brilliantly, where actually Lewandowski probably should do better. The other one is sort of a quick rebound that bounces off him more than anything else. But he didn't really impact the game. And I think there's a reason why he wasn't brought on until the 90th minute. It was because Hansi Flick wasn't completely confident in his ability to actually come on there and be at full capacity. Yeah. It didn't look like he was. And so when you have all of this happening, you know, Pau Victor's gone up front, you know, Fermín López is playing on the left at this point, and Rafinha is basically playing as a quarterback. It felt like Barcelona were just sort of looking for a moment of either madness or miracle. And against this Inter side, having lost leads and then finally fought themselves back to being in the lead, I just didn't think that was going to work.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. They couldn't let it go again. And by this stage, you know, De Vrij made an unbelievable block at one point. I can't even remember how late on it was now.
Yeah.
But there was like his near post. He makes an unbelievable challenge.
Really late.
Yeah. And that was like, that was the wall. It was like, thou shall not pass again. Like, we don't do this. We don't give up.
I'm tired of this.
Like, what the F is going on here? Like, we are Inter Milan. We are proud Italians. And we are probably going to get a rollicking on the back of the way that we've defended across these two legs. But it's been fun. But we cannot let this go on any longer. So they just didn't. And they managed to shut them out. And obviously, like, what, coming into the tie, I think most neutrals probably wanted Barcelona in the final just because of the way that they play football, because they are more free-flowing, because they're fun. But
everyone loves a tragic hero, right? Everyone loves
Inter have been fun.
Inter have been incredibly fun. Incredibly.
So doesn't mean we're going to get a boring final now. Inter have thrown that out of the window and said, no, we can be just as dramatic as anyone else in this game. And you know, as you say at the start, like you're struggling to come up with a competitor really for a two-legged Champions League game that's matched this. There was the Real Madrid Manchester City one, which I think we watched together at Live Score, if I'm not wrong, which ended 6-5 in that game when Rodrigo scored that quick fire double, which was that was an unbelievable tie.
But that was more, I feel like that was late drama. This had late drama, but it kind of had everything beforehand.
Yeah, absolutely. There was the tie in 2019, Barcelona 3, Liverpool 4, which was one for the ages. That was a
3-0 in the first leg followed by a 4-0 in the second. Like, yeah. I don't think I've ever seen two teams just stand there and punch each other's lights out in the way that these two did for 210 minutes.
The one from recent times that gave me as big as a, oh my God, wow factor was probably Tottenham 3, Ajax 3. Because that was like WTF stuff. Like, that really, like...
Do you want a fun fact?
Sure.
So, Gerard Martin today became the youngest player to provide two assists in a Champions League semi-final since Dele Alli on that night.
Oh, very interesting.
That is
very
a fun good. Fact for you.
Very good segue. I like that. I had no idea that we were going to talk about any of this, that I was going to say that and that you were going to say that. So that worked out well. But here we are, mate. And yeah, for all of that drama that you've just described, I mean, I'd say minute by minute, but it was basically 10 minutes by 10 minutes is where we've probably gone through the tie, because that's how often something seemed to happen of like, yeah, sheer drama. We come out of it and we've got Inter Milan heading into a final against PSG or Arsenal. Now, it's a shame that this couldn't have been the final, because, wow, that would have been... What a way to end it. One of the best Champions Leagues.
But again, would it have been the same game? Does it change? I often think semi-final second legs are the best part of a football season, like, because there's so much on the line, and especially when they're finally balanced in the way that these two are. Like, I think that there is a real sense of kind of like, whoa, okay, this could be it. And that's not to say that the final will be underwhelming. I think it probably won't be, but you don't tend to get these kind of games quite as much in finals as you do semifinals. Perhaps that's just a two-legged element of it as much as anything else. But I think it's probably a good time to throw it forward a little bit for both of these teams. And we'll start with Inter, because obviously they are in the final. And it's probably worth pointing out that 2 weeks ago, it looked like Inter's entire season was about to crumble. They'd lost in the Coppa Italia semi-final 3-0 to Milan in a result that absolutely nobody saw coming, apart from Sergio Conceição, apparently. And then they fall behind Napoli in the race for the Scudetto. And from a potential treble that was on, it looked like in the space of 2 weeks, Inter could lose it all, right? Like, they could be actually end up this season with no trophies. And to rest back their season in the way that they've done in these two legs against Barcelona, okay, as you point out, probably not the way they would have liked it to happen. If you said to them, you're going to come out on the one side of a 7-6 thriller, they'd probably be like, against this Barcelona team, I don't think we're going to come out the right side of a 7-6 thriller. But actually, when you kind of come into it from that perspective, to have stood up against this, what looked like an irresistible force in this Barcelona attack. And yes, they bent, and at times they had to kind of bend over backwards in order to get back up, but they did not break. And now they find themselves back in a Champions League final with what they will feel wrongs to right after what happened in that game against Manchester City 2 years ago. And with an opportunity to lift this trophy for the first time in 15 years, that's a pretty special turnaround in a very short space of time.
Yeah, it definitely is. Obviously, like, they're trailing by 3 points in Serie A. It's important, but not as important as this, I guess. And it's going to be extremely difficult to wrestle that gap back at this stage. It just seems that Napoli and Inter are just going to go
Napoli
through.
Napoli are going to win every game 1-0.
1-0, 1-0, 1-0 until they win the league. Yeah, exactly. So that might be a given at this point. For the Champions League, it's... how do they approach it? I guess fearlessly. I guess that's one way to look at it. PSG would obviously approach the tie in a similar way to how Barca have. I guess, like, there's much more similarity between PSG and Barca than there is Arsenal and Barca.
Yeah.
So
they're slightly less open, I think, PSG.
Yeah, slightly less open for sure. But they can play that kind of chaos football, which, by the way, we've obviously talked about on Ranks this season, the fact that chaos football is on its way back. And I'm pleased to see that that's kind of living to be true at the moment, in the way that a tie like this has opened up. You know, like, I can't remember if we said it on Patreon or on the main feed, but there has become such a trend for the dull sequences within football to be so prolonged, and the way that you keep the ball in possession at the back.
Control over chaos, right?
Yeah. And this game had none of that. There was none of the pass to pass, the centre back, go back to your goalkeeper, keep it for a minute stuff. Like, and that's why we've been given a tie like this, because these teams were willing to, yeah, to put everything on the line, really. And that's why we've been gifted a moment like this. I think they would. I think Arsenal could beat them. I definitely think Arsenal could beat Inter Milan, but I think Inter would rather play against Arsenal.
I don't. I think that, I mean, look, they could. Could they beat them? Yeah. Would they beat them? I don't think so. I think this Inter team are just, they're not the most well-balanced team left in the competition, because I think that the PSG probably remain that. But I think that they have this wiliness to them that everyone else doesn't. Look, last year they were knocked out by a Diego Simeone side, right? And they lost a game against Atleti where they would have felt that they had a really, really good chance of reaching the final again, because there was a very beatable Dortmund waiting for them in the semi-finals. And I think they would have really fancied their chances if they got to that Champions League final last year. But I think that there was an element of wrongs to right about that from their perspective, that last year, I think that they felt more of a dominant force, especially obviously in terms of Serie A. But I think generally across the course of it, they felt like a very well put together team. But something you kind of look at there, you know, we talked about Acerbi earlier, but he's not the only one here in this team who might think this is probably their last chance to go and win a Champions League trophy. And I wonder if that plays into it a little bit, you know, when you are being asked to just leave blood on the pitch, in the words of Jose Mourinho, to actually get through at the end of this kind of tie. You know, Stefan de Vrij there steps off the bench and is like, absolutely no chance, as you pointed out. These are players, maybe not in the twilight of their careers. And that's not to say that this Inter team is all, you know, old and finished. That's not what I'm getting at whatsoever. But there are players here, as opposed to Barcelona, who aren't just making the cut through, right? Who aren't just starting to launch themselves onto the world stage. These are players who have been there, done it. At times, they are grizzled veterans in this side. And I wonder if they're looking at that and going, right, this is it. We're putting everything into this basket because this could be the last chance we have to achieve this. And potentially the last chance to achieve this with an Inter side that over the last couple of years has been the dominant force in Italian football, has got to a Champions League final, will feel that they really should have got to another one last year and now have got to a second one in 3 years. I wonder if there is a sense of this squad feels like it's their time to go and win this, that they have this opportunity. And look, it flips us over to Barcelona because they will obviously be devastated considering the way that the tie went and considering that they were leading with a minute to play in normal time and will feel that they should have got through at that moment. But also you look at it and you think about Lamine Yamal and you think about Gavi and Pedri and Rafinha, who's had this second lease of life, who's one of the elder statesmen, but is only in the prime of his career too. Maybe Lewandowski, you know, probably coming towards the twilight of his years. But, you know, Dani Olmo and Frankie de Jong, Gerard Martin might not be, you know, a starter within this Barcelona side, but Pau Cabarsi just at the start of his career, Eric Garcia still relatively young in that kind of perspective. There's a lot to play for going forward for this Barcelona side. And one of the things we've talked about this year quite constantly, I think, across both Patreon and the main pod, is the fact that it's felt like a turning of the tide, that Barcelona might be putting something together to go and be, you know, a force in world football for many, many, many years to come again. That, I think, means that they have this space to maybe sit back and be like, okay, that was a really good go. We've left everything on there, but we will have this opportunity again next year. I don't know if Inter will necessarily have the same.
Yeah, of course. Like, this is the start of something for Barcelona. And, you know, it feels unbelievable that they were even at this stage. I know they don't really get a chance to sit and reflect because they're so busy week by week. But when they came into the season, to be involved in a semi-final would have been something. To be involved in a semi-final of this nature would have been something they would have loved the chance to go for, you know, and say, right, we're going to throw you forwards. You're in a Champions League semi-final. You're ahead with a minute of the game left.
Learning experience for young players as well, right? Like, and I don't mean that with any sort of condescending manner, but like, they will learn from this. And I know that always sounds like a ridiculous thing to say in the heat of what's just happened. And that's not going to be the thought pervading the dressing room right now. But it is definitely something that in 2-3 months, when they come back next season, they'll be like, okay, you know, what do we do better? What do we do against teams who have that slight more experience, that little bit of guile?
Well, they already have experience together as well, because so many of them come through together through La Masia. Like, they already have an advantage that most teams don't have in the competition, in that they know each other. Like, I don't know exactly how many it is of this match day squad today that have come through the youth setup, but I'm pretty confident it'll be more than anyone else who's left in the competition. And I know in the last round, they usually take photos in the iconic moments. Barcelona have this thing through history of like getting all the players together for a photo who have come through the academy, basically.
I think it's 11 in the match day squad.
Really? Yeah, there
just
you go.
A quick count.
I mean, that's pretty special. So they've already got a bond that most teams don't have. And to now have developed that from their younger years into senior football will mean even more. Obviously, they'll still be devastated right now, but they also will have a mentality that means that they kind of just take it onto the chin and move forward. This isn't like a gritty English team taking the L in a semi-final and never really recovering from it mentally. Like, a Spanish club with Spanish players like this tend to deal with it better, I would say. And so I would have every faith. Whether they can recover from it by the weekend for the Clásico, I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't know what this means for that.
There's going to be some tired legs out there, I'd imagine, at the weekend.
But, you know, again, what does it mean? Because they are so young, because they are, it does, it will mean a lot to them on the day. It's going to be a great Clásico, but yeah, it's still quite fancy to win it. But yeah, it's just all come very quickly for this Barcelona team. Perhaps in the end it came too quickly, but it was absorbing nonetheless. And we all thank them, I think, for giving us such incredible memories, not just tonight, but across the tournament so far, which has been one of the best Champions League seasons I can remember. Certainly in the years that I've been covering it, I think obviously changing the format of it and stuff was controversial, but so far so good for the organisers. I'd say it's been great. Probably won't be like this every year. Won't always get the ups and downs and the drama of
no, but it didn't with group stages either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I think that was great. And yeah, just looking forward to now seeing what plays out in the next semi-final and who they end up facing. Jack, I did watch something a bit different while this was going on.
I was going to say, I wanted you to finish with this.
So in America, we had a new show on Paramount called Beckham and Friends Live, which was a watch-along with David Beckham and Friends.
I can't believe, I mean, I know you love David Beckham.
Oh, mate, I love him.
I can't believe you turned this on.
I had to see it because it's like, you know, we've done watch-alongs, we've all watched watch-alongs on YouTube. And then they announced the guests as Guy Ritchie and Stanley Tucci. So you got a movie director and an actor. Turns out Stanley Tucci doesn't even like football, really. Like, said at one point, he said he lived in Italy for a year when he was a kid. That was like his...
No, I mean, look, I've watched Stanley Tucci's Searching for Italy about food, right? And it's one of my favourite programmes on TV. It's absolutely sensational viewing. But it's like, look, he's travelling around Italy. I've watched him do like 26 of the regions, right? And at no point has he mentioned a football team once. So I'm assuming that that's not been a big part of his food.
And it turns out he's only actually been friends with Beckham for about 3 or 4 months. Like, they're not even like long-standing friends. So
I would have Stanley Tucci at a dinner party, but I probably wouldn't invite him to my football watch along.
Well, it turns out that's basically what this was. So it was a dinner party. And you've got Kate Scott, who's formerly known as Kate Abdo, if you don't know who I'm talking about. She sat there. They've got a very elegant table. They're sat around in suits. There is a screen at the end that you can, a screen at both ends of the table up on the walls. But they've got like this lovely, oh, it looked lovely. Like they're these, all these, you know, like meats laid out with the cheeses, and they all had a glass of red wine ready to go. But I was like, oh, this could be fun. I don't know how I'm going to be able to follow the game, though. And turns out I couldn't follow the game because they weren't talking about it. They did not talk about it. So for the first 10 minutes, I was trying to stick with this. And it was just like Kate trying to like get conversation going. But and I was like, I can't, this is literally unwatchable. And I've actually still got, they split the
did
screen.
Did you have it like on a second screen? Or did
so they split the
it,
screen. So they had like the watch along a bit smaller and the game bigger, but didn't really know what to take in because they were having a random conversation, literally random, nothing about football, while you're trying to understand like the tactics of the game or whatever. So I was like, okay, I actually need to do a podcast on this. I can't watch this. So I went over, watched the rest of the first half, just on normal as you do. But then in the second half, you know, I got curious because I was like, that must be so boring. Like, they can't just have them involved. Anyway, so long story short.
Once the chaos started unfolding, surely you were like, well, they must be talking about the football.
Well, they started getting other people. So obviously in the other studio, you had Thierry Henry, you had Micah Richards, you had Jamie Carragher. Now, Jamie Carragher wasn't initially in there. I don't know if he got the invite, but Big Meeks and Thierry were in there. And over the course of the rest of the game, because I, in the end, I started flicking back because once they got a couple of the footballs in there, it was getting a bit more interesting. And I guess they had a bit of red wine, so it was getting a bit more
loose,
more chatty. And yeah, they were watching the game a little bit more. So I was able to do that. It was bizarre. But fortunately for the show, I'd say Micah Richards saved it because he just brought so much personality. Like, it was impossible It was completely unrelatable.
Did it feel like a really highbrow dinner party?
It just felt like you didn't belong there. It was like these three extremely rich, successful men. I'm white men, which is probably makes it even more unrelatable for all the audience. And it's like sipping on red wine. They weren't even like nibbling at the prosciutto in front of them. And then it comes along and Thierry Henry starts chatting football. I don't think Thierry Henry drinks, so he's just sat there chatting. And Big Meek starts getting on the red wine. By the end, he was hammered. I think he had about four glasses of red wine, and then they were like, the producer had to stop him because they were like, you've got to go and do the end of, you've got to do the end segment.
I bet the CBS segments afterwards are quite fun anyway.
But he brought personality to it, and he got everyone chatting a bit more, and Stanley Tucci came out and was like, kind of took to Micah Richards, although by the end he admitted he didn't even know what his name was, which Richards was disappointed about. But yeah, so by the end, I actually had kind of, I was quite absorbed by it. Luckily, I'd watched most of the main moments when I was flicking. Most of the main moments happened while I was on like full screen actually watching the game. But it was very interesting. Whether it works long term, I've certainly got my doubts. I mean, Beckham was supposed to be hosting, but I mean, he would barely say anything unless you asked him a question, you know, which is expected, right? Like he's,
yeah.
And yeah, just very unrelatable, a lot of the stuff that they would talk about. But it was interesting. I thought I'd bring it up because I know a lot of our American viewers would have checked it out because it was really pushed on Paramount to check out the Beckham and Friends live show. And it was utterly, utterly bizarre. And never have you seen a watch along that was that highbrow in your life.
Bring back live score watch longs, bit of dominoes and us breaking sofas in the live score studio by jumping around with Anita and Ellie. Like that's what it's really about. Right. On that note, I think we should probably call this a day. So we'll be back tomorrow doing this exactly the same time after the PSG Arsenal game. So make sure you're locked in for that one as well. But for now, thank you so much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, man.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Champions League Takeaway here on Ranks FC. Thank you so much for listening as ever, and we will see you all tomorrow. Take it easy, gang. Peace.